You are listening to the oldest grace-based web presence on the internet, www.gospelrevolution.com, deconstructing religion and barbecuing the holy cows of Christianity right here in front of your very eyes.
I can't go back to build an empire. I can't go back behind the barbed wire. I can't go back to a dampened fire now. Go back to boring meetings. I can't go back to pop chart singing. Can't go back, we're off the venture now.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you did not know you'd forgotten.
Can't go back to manipulation. I can't go back to intimidation. I can't go back to dehydration now. I can't go back to a dried up vine. I can't go back to no playtime. I can't go back, we've drunk the new one now.
So find yourself a spot in the shade while we wait for another heap and helping of the consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel in the religion-free zone and rarefied air of truth.
We can't go back to hierarchy. I can't go back to those in crowd parties. Can't go back to that malarkey now. Go back to dead religion. I can't go back to being driven. I can't go back. We've tasted heaven now. We just had enough and got on this bus.
And after that brand new intro, thanks to Godfrey Bertel. Go check him out, Godfrey Bertel on Facebook. He's a great fella, and he's traveling Europe right now, playing his fantastic music. So go check him out. But meanwhile, with more CPR of the gospel, consistent, persistent, repetitive news from the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, none other than Michael Williams. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Good morning, Don. I am doing very well here in East Tennessee. It is quite cold.
You deserve it.
You deserve it. I got up this morning thinking about 85 degrees, which I'm not going to see again until about 6 months from now.
No. It'll be 185 then, mate. Mate, when she gets hot in Nashville, she gets hot. In Tennessee, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We had our last 3 days of summer consisted of October the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd being 99 degrees here. And it was just insufferable. Everyone was praying for relief.
Mate, Nashville was the best place I could have come to America in, because I experienced blizzard conditions in downtown. So cars sliding all over the place like nobody's business. And then in the middle of summer, I think it got as high as 108. Not quite as impressive as 120 back home, but it was still kind of hot. So you had this, it went from one extreme to the other up there. Not in the same day, thankfully.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels that way down here. But, here we are, Don. My goodness.
How did we make it to this age? That's what I want to know, too.
I do not know. 2020, my gosh, and we're well into the year. We're almost halfway through this month already. This is crazy. 2020. So, I changed my age in January, right? You remember that?
I do remember that, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. So I am now 68 years old. And that means it's 2 years to the big 70. And
2 years. How old are you now?
Yeah. I'm 68.
You're 68, unofficially. Which means, you got to keep respecting me, mate.
I keep trying to advance myself ahead of you, but you just keep running ahead. So.
This little pipsqueak, this jumped up little Bible student from New Zealand, I think he was, started to tell me my P's and Q's and teach me what better people should know. And Adrian Billing jumped in. It was like, oh my gosh, I love not having to defend myself. Adrian Billing says something about I love the way you respect your elders or something like that. I forget. But I thought,
don't be so hard on the old man.
Yeah. He's, you know, brain cells start dying fairly young, you know, after 30. I mean, imagine how many I've lost now.
Yeah, it's, goodness gracious, what a trip. I remember as a child thinking about 2020 and the possibility of me making it there.
Back then, it meant perfect hindsight.
It did indeed. It meant that we were going to have, to me, I thought, oh, wow. You know, and I was really into prophecy and stuff as a child. I mean, I wanted to understand.
Yeah, get out of
what
here.
What was going to happen.
How old were you then?
Oh, my gosh. I was less than 10 when I began to get interested in, you know, being able to foretell the future and what the Bible. I got very interested in the Bible because it told the future.
Ah.
And
could you understand it at 10 years old?
Well, obviously not. I couldn't understand it at 20 or 30 or 40. Good Lord. So, no. But I was told that this was filled with prophecies about what was going to happen in the future and, you know, the mark of the beast and the coming tribulation, all of that stuff, because, you know, my conversion in the Baptist church at the age of 5, somewhere between 5 and 6, you know, I set in on these teachings, and man, I was fascinated with the Bible about the future.
Wow.
It has been such a delight to know there's nothing about the future in the Bible.
Just say that again, mate.
There's nothing about the future in the Bible. It is such a relief. I cannot tell you to think that we're supposed to get in here and read these and figure out what the numeric values of the words are so that we will be able to apply it to today. And is this about, you know, is this about President Obama, or is it about President Trump, or is it about, you know, Russia? Is Russia coming down, and is the United States prophesied in the Bible? And,
mate, I was just talking with somebody in the last couple of days about this very thing. Death is swallowed up in victory. When death is swallowed up in victory, then shall corruption put on incorruptibility. And he said, well, has corruption put on incorruption? I said, well, has death been swallowed up in victory? But in Christianity, we used to have to break whole verses apart and make one part 2,000 years ago on another part, maybe maybe in another 2,000 years for all we know.
Well, even what we did a bit with Ephesians, it's not futuristic, but speaking of dividing it up.
Oh.
For by grace are you saved through faith. And then we divided that up and said, well, it's his grace and your faith. When the subject there is actually faith. Yes. And it's we had to divide it up and then switch the front to the back. I mean, the juggling that had to go on. I am so thrilled with the gospel and the gospel revolution. We don't have to juggle. We just don't have to subdivide. We don't have to figure out. We have two ages to look at, one before the cross, one after. And that's it.
And it doesn't matter if there are questions that we can't quite answer yet. That's true for everyone.
It's all right. Yes, thank God there are questions. That's job security.
Oh, that is. What? I'm sorry. That is too funny.
What we don't know is our job security. It's not what we do know. And now for us, it's job security because that's what people have become to expect. Of this wonderful thing called the gospel revolution.
Mate, I was talking to a fellow the other day. Actually, we were private messaging on Facebook. His name is Chris Kuntz, and he was he's a lovely young fellow, and we haven't always agreed on everything. But he said to me, well, I'm not so sure about this inclusion thing, but I'm listening to your podcast, and you don't sound like you're an old fella. You sound like a young Michael Caine. And I thought, Michael Caine, I like Mike Caine. That's a bit of a compliment. I don't know why I said that.
Did you take your teeth out for him and talk?
Oh. Oh, dear. Oh, I'm glad I could find them this morning. They were hidden away under a pile of newspapers behind a cupboard.
Well, what do you need them for?
Well,
except for the power cat.
Apparently to please you. You don't like it when I don't wear my teeth.
Oh, I do not. Oh, my gosh.
No wonder you've stopped taking me to Calgary. You're just embarrassed when we go to eat. And my teeth drop out.
Oh, goodness.
Well, mate, you're right. We've been doing, and during the week we had this chat about belief. And so I floated this idea on Facebook about belief. I think I said belief is not knowledge, never has been, never will be.
Yeah, it has. This man, since we did our show last week, this has been brewing in me. My learning process is something that's very personal. I know how I learn. I've become familiar with it. I know when to leave something alone and put it on that shelf that
John Osteen,
my good friend John Osteen, told me he had. And I thought, if you have one, I can have one too.
There you go.
I know when to leave something alone. I know when to remove the shell from the chicken's bottom, you know.
I don't want to even. No.
Another story for those that have been listening to me for over the years. I know you've heard the story, but I know how I learn, and I hope you know how you learn, all of you out there that are listening, and be respectful to how you learn. Don't try to fit into someone else's learning process. Don't try to bend and twist yourself into how they are doing it. All these people that are telling you how to get your day started, do this first, do that first, and then when you do that, and then you meditate, and then you go, blah, 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 blah. My God, can't you come up with your own way of living without somebody else telling you, well, successful people do these things. Well, successful people do those things. Well, who the hell did they follow before they were successful?
Good question.
So, you know, this life was not designed for one of us to set a mold and everybody else to follow. You know, find your own path, your own way of learning. I have come to cherish mine. I love my thoughts. Goodness gracious, I've learned to love all of them. And there's ones you don't want to know about. There's ones I don't even want to talk about. I could go to jail for some of them, you know.
Isn't that a good thing that you can't be punished for what you think? Although, let's not go there.
Yeah. So the ability to treasure your thoughts. I literally treasure my thoughts, and you know, I've stopped battling with my brain. One of the things I've had pretty much all my life is songs getting stuck in my head on occasion. And I can't get that song out of my head. I remember I went through years of frustration trying to get them out of my head. And then
how did you do it?
Well, I started getting older and I started forgetting a lot of things anyway. So I thought if I just left this song that won't go out of my head just before I go to bed or sometime, you know, if I just leave it alone and just. I know I'm going to forget it because that's my process now as I forget things. So I just leave it alone. And the next thing I know, I can't remember what song it was that was stuck in my head. So
I've got to play another song. I wish that worked that way for me. But see, I was raised in fundamental evangelicalism and I was raised on Southern gospel.
Oh, God, you poor man. And that's still stuck in your brain.
Yeah, I was right. Yeah. But mind you, in grade three, we were singing American folk songs. God knows why. But anyway, in Australia, that was. But now I still sing those songs. And unfortunately, because of my memory, I remember all the words. And then I've got to stop singing them. And some of them have got lovely memories attached to them. Uh-huh. And all I can do is just go back to 1967 and listen to Joe Cocker or something, you know, get rid of all that crap.
I've gotten to where I can switch songs pretty effectively now. It's amazing when you let go of the need to control your thoughts, how much control you have over your thoughts. It really is. It's been an amazing process. I don't know that this is helping anyone at all about anything right now, but we all have this process of coming to peace with our own brain. It really is something that, in our lifetime, we'll never understand it. But it is something that you can come to peace with, and that is your very own brain. My gosh, folks, it's a marvelous thing that we are who we are and what we do, and we are infused with God Himself. And this really does go to the root of what we're talking about, the difference between the almost vapidness of the term believe or believed or belief and the surety and the stability of knowing something.
This is going to be a new area of exploration for us, isn't it?
And a complete one. We're going to exhaust this until the last dog dies, so hang on.
and as I discovered yesterday, belief, and what we do is we say to ourselves, oh, I believe this, I believe that, I believe the other thing. And we somehow associate with that the certainty it must absolutely be true. But when you go to the Cambridge English Dictionary, the Oxford English Dictionary, any good English dictionary, guess what it says?
What's that?
It says the belief is the feeling of being certain about something. It is the feeling about being certain about something. Not the knowledge, not the certainty of something, but the feeling that you can. It's like, do you believe that 3 + 5 = 17? Well, I believe it. Well, you've got the feeling that it might be true, but you don't have the knowledge that it might be true.
Yeah, and what we have is uncertain knowledge that comes to us. And it's when that uncertain knowledge becomes followed by a surge of feeling and emotion, that really is what belief is. That's what I have come to think in my own life. As we were thinking the other day, and as we were talking, I woke up the other day with this definition of what I see belief to now mean, just as a point of reference to move forward. This isn't a hard, fast, fixed definition. This is a definition at this moment for the purpose of moving forward. And yes, I can do that,
Yeah. 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 It's who, I don't know who once said, hold the truth lightly.
Yes. Oh, that's a good statement. Yeah.
Isn't it though? Yeah.
Yeah. But it is, we are in a process, and this process is not to get our souls saved. I was reading a gentleman who comments on Gospel Revolution, and a lot of people are into some of his teachings, at least, which we really respect a great deal of what's being said. But he was making a statement about how that let's all just hang in there, and I'm paraphrasing, and let's just all hang in there, and let's just keep going, and let's just keep waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God. And it's just like this cold, you might as well have dumped a whole bucket of cold ice over my head. I wanted so much to respond. I thought, no, you don't need to start a battle with somebody who is partially at least on board with the gospel. I'm sure he thinks he's completely on board with the gospel. But this notion of a process to become what God wants us to be, the process is not to become what God intended us to be. The process is knowing what God intended us to be. That's the process.
Most of my Christian life was taken up with being robbed of what I was by trying to become what I already was.
That's Christianity. I mean, it has, this is diabolical in nature, Don, that something has to come in and convince you of what you're not so it can offer you what you already are.
Oh, Lord. The mafia would be proud of that, wouldn't it?
The what?
The mafia.
The mafia.
Yeah.
The mafia.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. The mafia. The mafia.
You just Australianized that too much for me to know what that was. So.
but they would be proud of the blackmail. They would be proud of the protection racket.
Good.
They would be proud of it.
Oh, it is. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's almost like they wrote the book on it. So, and it's being followed to the T. This is just, I mean, it's crazy. It's like convincing a wealthy person that they're broke and then having them to go slop the pigs for you, you know?
And then doling them out an allowance from their own
money. Yes, from their own money. It's shocking. People wonder why sometimes that we come down so hard on Christianity. And please let me reiterate again that we do not come down on Christians. We are coming down on a religion called Christianity, which is just as diabolical as any religion that you can think of that you disagree with on planet Earth.
And have you ever noticed when you say to Christians, now I'm using the word Christians, but remembering that they embrace their Christianity.
Yes.
When you say to them, well, what about 400 years of slavery? Oh, that was other Christians. Oh, well, what about murdering people you don't agree with? Oh, that was the Catholics. That wasn't us.
Yeah, right.
No. We're much better than that. We're very no. Don't. I mean, honest to goodness. What about the doctrine of discovery where if a native race did not know the name of Jesus, you could just go in and kill them and slaughter them? No, that wasn't us. You can't blame us for what the Pilgrim Fathers. Oh.
No, but we are the Christians. They are Christians. And don't you want to be a Christian too? No. I have been set free.
Onward, Christian soldiers.
The connotation of even that song is violence. It really is. I know we turned it into we're soldiering on for the Lord. We're soldiering on, but actually it's reflective to the Crusades.
I didn't turn it into that, mate. I turned it into like a mighty tortoise moves the church of God. Brothers, we are treading where we've always trod. And I've got 15 verses of that, if you'd like.
Oh, no, thank you. Well, so here we, you know, we're going into this verse, believed, and I called you the other day, I woke up.
I know, and I didn't like what you called me either.
Quietly. You know, you just have to get used to it. When I get a revelation about you, I've got to tell you. So, remember those days when you got to insult people because God told you something about them.
Oh, yeah.
I hate losing those days.
There was something precious about being able to say, well, I'm a prophet. That's how prophets speak, you know.
Yes.
Suck it up and be a man.
Yeah. Now I'm a nice person, but I'm a prophet right now. So just, I now have a pass on anything called humanity or grace or mercy or any of those. They all go out the window with the prophet.
And you know, you didn't have to be a Pentecostal to say that. You can do that as a Baptist simply on the basis of hierarchy. Well, I am the area superintendent, you know, and you're just a pastor.
Yeah. But I called Don. It was like suddenly I saw this vista in front of me, which Don's used to this happening, and that this issue of belief is really like a malignant cancer that has attached itself to the gospel. It has. So I guess I'm just kind of spilling the beans here on where this project is going. We've misunderstood this. This word has been misunderstood. I think it's been possibly mistranslated. I think when we go into the Old Testament, you'll see that any place that it was translated in the Old Testament as the word believe or believed, that the Hebrew word really called for something else altogether. And when we read it, and we read it as the word believe in its context, it does not fit. It just simply does not fit these Old Testament, especially the prophecies about Christ. The thing that I was shocked about, Don, is every prophecy about Christ, the word believe did not fit in the translation. It was clumsy. It was contradictory to the very verse. And we're going to be going into that. So if that's the way they translated the word believe in the Old Testament, you know that there was the coloration, at least, of that in the translation in the New Testament as to how that word was used. Mm. We made a really wonderful discovery, which has been right there in front of us all this time, even according to Mr. James Strong, that in the New Testament, the word actually, the root word of this entire thing means to credit. When you credit someone or something, it means that it's already done, and you now have decided who has done that. Okay, I'm giving you credit for that.
Yeah, but I still am having a little problem with that, too, and I've got to be honest and tell you this. In modern language, in modern English, when you credit someone with something, isn't that still a little bit – couldn't that still be based on hope rather than knowledge?
Well, it could be based on anything, but the complete act of giving credit is that you have come to a determination. You wouldn't give credit if you just believed it, if you just were thinking this might be. You're not going to give credit until you know it's done. Will you be right? Will you be correct or incorrect is not the issue. It's that based on the knowledge you have, that you have credited this.
I see now.
Now you may have to change your mind and say, no, I don't give credit to that anymore. My gosh, we've done that many times. But at least you don't fall into this vapid sea of belief. I believe. I just see an empty little dinghy out in the middle of the ocean with a ragged, tattered sail, and it's being, on a peaceful day, but the ocean waves just lifting and tossing it, and somebody laying there, waiting on a rescue. That's what I see belief. When I use the term believe, I see that picture, and it takes you nowhere. There are no answers. There's no conclusions. You haven't decided anything. You don't know where you're going. You don't know what you're doing. You are lost.
If I read you right, what you're saying is that belief is like 50 Shades of Grey, whereas knowledge is black and white. Am I getting that right?
I am not sure. I've never thought about the comparison.
Well, I'm not talking about the book 50 Shades of Grey, but it seems to me like that what you're saying is that knowledge is certain.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just started thinking about 50 different ways to,
I'm surprised you read such trash.
I told you, my mind goes places that I don't really need to publicly announce. This is a determination that you make. It is not a belief. It is a persuasion based on knowledge, not empty knowledge. Now, you may accept empty knowledge. Even to our discredit also, is that we would accept incomplete knowledge and come to a conclusion.
But isn't that the human condition? Don't we all, to some degree or another, tend to believe that which we find convincing at the time?
Well, convincing at the time and convenient also to our current persuasions, other persuasions that we have had. Proverbs says, he that answereth a matter before hearing it out is a fool. So I think what we've got amongst us.
Are you just calling me names again? I sometimes, sometimes there's a story. George Younce says George Younce is a bass singer, and so is J.D. Sumner, who used to sing for Elvis. And George Younce would say to J.D., he'd say, "You know, J.D., there isn't anyone I wouldn't rather hear sing than you." And J.D. would say, "Well, thank you, George." J.D.'s the lowest bass in the world, apparently, according to Ripley's, believe it or not. And so next time they met, George would say, "You know, J.D., there's no one I wouldn't rather hear sing than you in the whole world." And it took a half a dozen times before J.D. Sumner said, "George, would you mind just running that by me once more?"
A little slower this time, yeah.
Yeah.
No, a good example. And also another good example of answering a matter before you hear it out, as we just did. So, but we do need, we need to listen. We need to listen. We need to be able to let down our barriers to our current persuasions if you really want to learn. Now, if you are happy where you are, you don't want to grow, you've got your persuasions, whatever they are, and you're more interested in defending than learning, then go ahead. I personally love learning. I love to learn. And, you may have to listen to some opinions that are contrary to what you think and actually be able to listen to it all the way through before offering an opinion. And maybe you might want to stop and think, how does this fit, instead of I'm certain. You know, you can listen with an attitude of wanting to learn, or you can listen with an attitude of wanting to defend also. I've sat and listened to people, and all I was thinking about while I was listening is how I'm going to combat what they just said. I'm not listening to them at all. I'm only gaining information about how I can use it against them. Now, I think that's what we do. You know, I think that's what a debate is. And if you take up a position on a debate, and that's one thing I don't like about debate, is because debate doesn't move people, the debaters, because the person who is in the debate is there to defend a point and a position. Whether they are correct or incorrect, they are there to, they've decided this is the position I'm going to defend in this debate.
And once you are heavily invested in any point of view,
mm-hmm.
then any attack on that point of view is generally thought to be an attack on yourself.
That's because it's a belief. That's because it's a belief instead, because you want to know if something is a belief or something you know. You can tell by your emotional response to someone who disagrees with you, because it is your emotional attachment, your feelings and emotions that have persuaded you. How can you tell? Is it knowledge that has persuaded you, or is it feeling and emotion that has persuaded you? Which one gets challenged when you hear something contrary to what you think?
That's a good litmus test. You know, if something inside you rises up.
Yeah, and boy, I've had to check my dog many times. I've got a Rottweiler inside of me that wants to respond to that, until I've learned to put that Rottweiler on a leash, at least, I don't think I've ever gotten rid of him. But at least he's on a leash anyway, and I can pull him back long enough for me to hear what someone else has to say about a subject. Why? Because I want to learn. This is a great passion for me in my life. And, the one thing that it's done is taken me out of the arena of any particular group to belong to on any level of thought. Because if you are going to join a group, you're going to be, you're kind of committing to thinking what they think. So I'm just one of those people that just doesn't seem to fit anywhere, because no matter which side of the spectrum you might be coming from, I'm still going to want to think that through. And I'm going to want to hear opposing thought. I'm going to want to hear that and until I can come to a resolute place. But as you were saying, Don, when your feelings and emotions, when they are the ones that are reacting, then you kind of know where you're invested. It's not in the knowledge side of this, because if you're invested on the knowledge side, why wouldn't your knowledge be the one that's challenged?
And so that's the area we're going to be exploring, I would say, for some time, based on what you're saying.
I think it's going to be the subject is going to be here for quite some time now. So we are going to try to remove the tentacles of what we have become either convinced of that this word means, what the word has become, and or what it has been mistranslated as. We're going to cover all the bases on this, because I don't know where all of the fault lies with this term. I can just tell you there's great fault here, and we are going on an investigation to see where the fault lies with the term believe that we are now using, and we're going to find out where it came from, how it got in there, who started using it, why we're using it, does it mean now what it did when the Bible was translated? Why did they choose these terms over others? And like I said, especially when I got into reading through all of the places where the term believe or believed shows up, and I saw that, and even the definition in the Hebrew is just not this vapid word. I still go back also and rely on Paul. Paul saw something in this word believe that was, I think, distasteful to him. Because his testimony, I remember, you can go back and I read all the way through his testimony in Philippians. And I think it's Philippians chapter 3. And there's no place that Paul says he ever became a believer. It's not there. He continually repeats the word know, and what he wants to know, and how you come to know, and to know the power of his, not just know Christ, but to know the power of his resurrection. He didn't say anything about believing in the power of the resurrection or believing in Christ. He said, I know. He said, these are things that I know. I remember several years ago getting so jealous of Paul. Because, who are you? Number one, you got saved by the faith of God, and now you're telling me that you know Christ and you know the power of his resurrection. You're not using the word believe that I've been taught. Why didn't you use the term believe? Why are you using the term know? How can you know and I have to believe? If you guys are interested in this subject, stay on, because if you're as ticked off that we have to settle for believing and Paul embraced knowing, and you want to know why, that's what we're going to be studying.
And no one talked more about faith or belief, as it's translated. Belief is an awfully weak word forensically compared to the word faith, and it is far more linked with hope than it is with faith. And if hope and faith are not two different separate things, how come Paul linked them together when he said these three are really important?
Goodness.
Faith, hope, and charity of course is going to outlast the other two anyway. So there is a lot in this subject for us to, the word gnosis or gnosis in the Greek, sometimes epignosis, is a word that means knowledge. And
yeah.
Paul taught more about faith than any other. In fact, Paul taught more about just about everything than any other writer in the New Testament.
Yeah.
And
well, he wrote more than anybody else in the New Testament. So
yeah, and the fact that he elevated knowledge above faith, and let's forget for the moment whose faith, but the fact that he elevated our knowledge above our faith is really quite extraordinary.
So it's worthy of our time. I'd say more than worthy. I think it's going to be gospel revolutionary to investigate this term and see where this goes. I've got about 20 Old Testament verses going through my head right now that I can't wait for us to get to. But Don, we need to keep our commitment to getting through these chapters of Ephesians. So where did we leave off?
Deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes. You are listening to
Gospel Revolution.
I think we left off around about verse, just in the last couple of verses of chapter 2 of Ephesians. So if we went to, say, for example, verse 19, and just read from 19 till the end, we might have a comment or two on that, but essentially that will bring us up to probably up to date. So Paul says, consequently, on the basis of what I've already said, and we've already made the point that chapter 1 is what has happened to us from our point of view. Chapter 2 is Paul makes a bunch of points about what happened according to God's point of view.
That's very good.
And he finishes off by saying, consequently, then, no longer are you guests and sojourners. And essentially he's talking to non-Jews, but are fellow citizens of the saints and belong to God's family. Now, in the Old Testament, there were people called strangers. Strangers did not become Jewish, I think, for 10 generations. I mean, long enough that you would have forgotten about it, I'm sure. But they were not considered to be Jews. They were guests and sojourners. But now, you're one. And that's what this chapter is about. You are one, but are fellow citizens of the saints and belong to God's family. Who are the saints? We are told in Hebrews chapter 11 at the end of it that the saints were all those people in the Heroes Hall of Fame of faith. All of the people that were talked about as being very faithful, actually they were more moved by fear than by faith, but that's another thing.
Don, I think this is a really good point to make at this point. You just brought up something that I've never thought about before, that this is referring to the Jewish law custom that you had to, if there was a stranger in need, a foreigner, someone walking through town and they needed lodging, they were required to give that lodging. That was the custom, the law, if you will. And this is really what he's referring to now. You're no longer just walking through town being invited in as a guest.
Yeah.
You're family now.
How about that?
Yeah. I love that picture.
That's something. Being built. So consequently then, you are being built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets. And, you know, one of the big things that Paul had to contend with was, if you look at Jonah, what was Jonah's complaint? Jonah's complaint was that God actually let Nineveh off the hook without them having to be circumcised and become Jews. And he said, I knew you were a merciful God. That's why I didn't want to. Why do you think I went to Tarshish in the first place? I tried to escape from the... and God has nothing to say to him. Same as in Romans 9, where our Calvinist friends will say, yes, but God loved Jacob and hated Esau. Really? Is that what it really says? And so the Jews were used to, or the Jewish hearers of this gospel of peace between both Jews and Gentiles, and Jews, Gentiles, and God, the hearers were used to the fact that some people deserved it and other people not so much. So he says here, but you're built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets. Hey, my Jewish friends, the Gentiles have been dovetailed in so much that you don't know who the strangers are and who the guests and sojourners are and who the fellow citizens are anymore.
Exactly. And the Jews did not have to be cut off for that to happen.
Didn't happen.
No, and that is a basic doctrine in Christianity that the Jews were cut off. See, and this is where we put this off to the future again, Don. The Jews were cut off. God turned totally to the Gentiles, and now the Gentiles, Christians, are now turning around appealing to the unbelieving Jews to bring them in, and then the end of the world is going to come. Ah, such, I mean, oh, gosh.
Hey, you know, we missed one. We missed one on the 1st of January. Apparently, the end of the world was supposed to happen on the 1st of January.
Oh, my goodness. I've got to where I just hardly pay attention anymore.
Yeah, but if you and I had had our wits about us, mate, if you'd have called me, and not a bad name, but just called me and said, hey, listen, go to your Christian friends and get them to sign over their mortgage to
you.
Oh,
exactly. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, the power of these comparisons sometime, and that's why we go through this so slowly as we do and try to look and examine this, not to rearrange it for our purposes, but to look at it for what it actually says. These are some very powerful things that the Jews did not have to be cut off, folks. This deserves our attention just for a moment. The Jews did not have to be cut off for the Gentiles to be brought in. And that's another, you know, until the time of the Gentiles is done. Well, the time of the Gentiles was at the cross. Goodness, all of these things go into their place in a perfect, beautiful picture. Once you give up your persuasions of that the Bible has something to say about the future. It's about Christ. It's about what he did, not what he's doing, but about what he did. Because what he did is so powerful, it will affect your life today, every moment, every second. It will affect your life. And God is involved in life, not in the point that he is guiding and directing and orchestrating it, but in the fact that he lives in you. You and he are one. We are one together.
Wow.
And that is the concept that is going to change this planet into a different thing than what we have today, which is based on dualism. And dualism is supported by the term belief. We're trying to believe something outside of us. And this is not about belief, folks. This is not about dualism. This is about coming to the glorious knowledge that, this text right here, as Paul is saying, the Gentiles became equal with the Jews. And that was an important phase in this death, burial, and resurrection, even as Paul told us in Ephesians chapter 1 about this process, and then chapter 2 about this quickening. And when this quickening, the quickening doesn't happen when you became a, quote, believer. You see how that's been tarnished by this word belief? You see, belief is something that you're trying to put together to work for the future. Knowing is something you're putting together so you can base it on what has happened already. We are not speculators.
And that would be knowledge.
That's knowledge.
Yeah, if something has already happened, good news, past tense, knowledge, it's definite. But belief is about the future. And, you know, did you know that the word belief, did a little research this week, the word belief is, it comes from the German or Germanic beloved, and it is related in English to the word beloved. And so,
wow.
Beloved, what knowledge do you believe? What is your favorite dogma? What is your favorite doctrine? Oh, I'm an Arminian. Well, you're an Arminian believer, belover. Or you're a Calvinist belover.
The feeling and emotion that's attached to that word, beloved. Yeah.
And these people have the unmitigated gall to say to universalists, and I'm talking about universalists as an umbrella kind of a term, not as redemptionists, but they have the unmitigated gall to say, oh, it's just wishful thinking. I mean, that's how you wish God was. No, we don't wish God was like that at all. We know exactly what he accomplished at the cross.
We know it.
And we
know it.
And we don't say it is almost finished, as you do. I'm sorry, my Christian friend, but when you say that it is finished or the finished work of Christ. What you really are trying to say is the almost finished work of Christ.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, the next chapter will reveal what we're going to be doing next. So these things have already, and I want you to notice that what Paul is saying here is that you are built upon the same foundation. Folks, this is amazing, this picture that he's given, as you used to be travelers through. You were not a people. You weren't nothing. As we would say here in Tennessee, you weren't nothing.
You didn't know. You didn't know that you didn't know.
Yeah, that's right. So, but where you used to be invited in by these good people, now you're one of them. And whatever they were built upon, that's what you're now built upon. You're built upon the same prophecies. You are built upon the same scriptures. You're built upon the same completion of the work of Christ. Even though it was not for you, this was all a very Jewish thing that took place, and Jesus was a Jewish Messiah, but this powerful thing of that was... even this, just think of this analogy that was put there just so Paul could say, you that who were strangers and foreigners, you passerbyers that used to be, it was required by law that a Jewish family, if you needed refuge, they had to take you in and feed you and give you a place to sleep. And that those things that now you're not just one of the guys that pass by and enjoy that hospitality for a moment, you are now that thing. You are the thing that used to be your occasional comfort, your occasional refuge that you could depend on, and now you are the thing itself.
Oh,
how powerful. You are now built upon the prophets. Folks, you are built upon, yes, you were just a Gentile, but guess what you've got now by being brought in without the Jews having to be cut off. With you being brought in, you now are built upon the same foundation. Well, them Old Testament scriptures back there is all just to the Jews. That's right. But now we are built upon that.
Well, actually...
So don't be dismissive of it.
Actually, much of it was to the Jews, but one of the incredibly grand exceptions of that I came to love years ago, and that was Nineveh.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know, did God only have room for 6% of the population in the Jewish population? Just think of Nineveh. Just think of that whole story. Read through Jonah. It's only a couple of chapters. And you may, who knows, you may come away with a different point of view.
Definitely gave us a glimpse of the gospel is what Nineveh does. I mean, it's very powerful.
So you're built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Now, that is not the word arche. It's a different word altogether, but it still means... Without that cornerstone, there is no foundation. Without that cornerstone, there is no stability.
Right.
Without that cornerstone, nothing can be measured at all.
The whole thing falls apart.
Falls down. He says, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, by whom all the building is fitly framed together and grows unto a holy temple of the Lord. That's a really clumsy translation. In the Greek, it says, in whom every... all of the home building being together connected is growing unto a temple holy in the Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get any more one than when you both build into the same building. You don't get any more one than that.
No, exactly. And that growth, let me say, Don, we can look into this in the Greek, but we know that growth took place 2,000 years ago. This expansion took place 2,000 years ago. The tents were, the stakes of the tent were lengthened, and the tent was made bigger. The entire thing was all inclusive. This is not something that's growing now. It's something that has grown into this magnificent temple. The temple has been completed. We're not building the temple. The temple is finished. This new temple that God intended to make, which everybody's waiting for another one to be built in Jerusalem, look around you. It's everybody on this planet. This is the temple of God. And we despise this. I tell you, the way Christianity teaches what they call the gospel, they teach Christianity. They do not. Let me say this very clearly. Christianity does not teach the gospel. Christianity teaches Christianity. It is not the gospel. There's nothing gospel in any denomination that I can come, that I can look at. All of them have multiple things that insult the grace of God, set aside the grace of God. If not multiple, they all have something in it that despises the grace of God, despises the grace of God, doing despite to his grace by saying there's such a thing as sin in the world, doing despite to the grace of God.
Let me just put some flesh on the bones of those words. Doing despite, having contempt for.
Contempt. Ooh, wow.
The grace of God.
Boy, do we see that all the time.
Oh, Lord. James was still offering blood sacrifices a quarter of a century after the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Jesus' blood was, well, as I said earlier, it was the almost finished work of Christ. His blood wasn't quite enough by itself. Yeah. But James was still offering blood sacrifices a quarter of a century. Go check it out. It's in Acts 21, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And 22. And in that respect, without knowing it, and I'm not saying that these people are deliberately looking down their noses. I'm saying they don't even know that they're displaying the contempt for the work of Christ. Don't even know it.
No, they have no clue what they're doing. You know, they are well-intended. I do not doubt that. But boy, once you get in there, it does not cater to the nature of Christ. It caters to the nature of self. You get, like we were talking about, I'm a prophet. Oh, I'm a this, I'm a that. You get to set aside all the things you know should be a part of this thing called the gospel as far as character and nature and all of that. You get to set it all aside because you have a temporary exemption. Well, you know, you get to be mean because you're being mean for Jesus. You know, you have righteous indignation. It's not just indignation, it's righteous indignation is rising up in me. And I remember, oh gosh, I dealt with this righteous indignation thing. I remember Kenneth Copeland. We had three of the sweetest young girls. They were called the Williams sisters. And there were these tiny, beautiful China doll looking girls that sang in Norval's meetings. And they were just harmonized like crazy. And so they were brought in to do when Norval was speaking with Kenneth Copeland. I was there in those services, and Norval had the Williams sisters sing a song. I can't remember for sure, but I think it was one of the songs that they always did was "Lord, you know I need a brand new touch. My faith for yesterday is gone." So they stood up and sang that song. And then Kenneth Copeland that was kind of the introductory song to Kenneth Copeland getting up. And he got up and he ripped them apart. "Don't you ever sing that song of doubt and unbelief in my presence ever again." And these girls just were sitting there shuddering in their seats.
You've got to hand it to those Christians, because I mean, if you don't, they just take it off you anyway.
So this excuse to be cruel, unkind, unmerciful, insulting, degrading, all in the name of Christ. It's poppycock, folks. Just you don't have an excuse. You know, if you want to be that way, be that way. If you want to do it for God's sakes. Don't blame it on Jesus.
Yeah, look, if you want to be exclusionary, if you want to be dualistic, if you want to believe that there's a God out there and you're down here, if you want to believe that there's us and them, if you want to believe that there are some great unwashed masses who don't quite measure up to your holy and perfect and self-righteous perfection, if you think that, I got a suggestion. Go find yourself an island somewhere and go and live on it by yourself. I don't want any part of that anymore. I've had a gutful of it. It says here that at that time, you know, this whole book so far is talking about the whole of humanity.
Yeah.
Paul says in Romans 11:32, and here is a verse nobody can gainsay. There is two verses that everyone will say mean what they don't say, because see, all doesn't mean all. If you don't believe that all have been redeemed, if you don't believe that all have been reconciled to God, if you don't believe that God was in Christ reconciling all of the world to himself, then you are a dualist.
Yeah.
And you also don't believe that God corralled us all in unbelief so that he could have mercy on us all. And the all is who he's talking about here.
Yeah.
That at that time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. I mean, you had no hope.
That's so beautiful.
You did not know that you did not know.
Oh, I hope you guys are getting this big picture. Man, I'm telling you, this, the oneness and the inclusion of this and the conclusion of Paul. Now, this is just by the time we get to chapter 2. His eloquence at preaching being one. I avoid saying oneness because that term is used so many times in a goal-oriented fashion. We are trying to achieve oneness here. This is not something that we achieve. So instead of oneness, you know, unity is a much better, we have come into the unity of the faith. We're not coming into oneness. There's no, that term is not in the Bible. Oneness is not in the Bible. And we like using Bible terms. One of my goals in my life has been to recover biblical terminology and restore it back to what it was intended to mean. So we are either going to find out this term believe, either it has an original meaning or an intended meaning that we have totally trashed, or it should never have been translated this way. One of the two and possible other options are there to look at. But folks, this is powerful. And as Don reads this last verse here, it brings this all together. This is not a futuristic verse. It's not a you're continuing to the building's getting bigger and bigger. Well, the only reason it's getting bigger and bigger is because the habitation of the earth is getting larger. If there's going to be any increase, but even that does not increase the temple. The temple is all, whatever all is. If there's two people, the temple would be full. If there's 10 billion on the planet, then the temple is full. It's not over full. If there's 40 billion people in it, the temple is full. It is complete. It's complete at whatever stage it is in. We are not trying to complete the temple. You're not coming in and now the temple's bigger. Oh, hallelujah. We got, you know, the temples are growing and they're growing and they're growing. I'm sorry. I got to do Kenneth Copeland when I do those things. So.
Well, I'm going to read verse 21 and then finish off with verse 22.
Really? In spite of everything that I'm trying to do here, you're still going to go ahead and just read?
I'm just going to do it, mate. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, you get to call me names. I get to read. So in whom all the building, fitly framed together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord. And then remember, he's talking about all here. In whom you also are built together for a habitation of God through the Spirit. That is such a weak, pusillanimous translation. Let me read it to you in the Greek.
Well, tell us what it means.
In the Greek it reads, in whom and you are being together home builded. That's one word in the Greek. are being together home builded into down home place. Now, down home place really means that it's a place that has been set in place. It doesn't mean, well, down home Mississippi, you know. So
doesn't have the southern connotations
to
it.
Not quite, no. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a down home place. It's the down home place, or it's the dwelling place, or the founded home place. You know, God didn't have a home before he had you.
Don, that is so powerful. You got to say that again. I'm going to make you say it again.
You know, God didn't have a home until he found you.
Don, yes.
So in the Greek it reads, in whom you are being, present tense. Paul is writing this 2,000 years ago, and he calls it present tense. Are being together, home builded, all of you whom God had mercy on, all of you who God corralled into unbelief, all of you who God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, all of you, and you are being home builded to down home, a founded, a well-founded dwelling place of the God in spirit.
Well, Don, what you've just described is that God himself was a stranger and a foreigner. At least to us, he was he not?
He was to his whole creation.
He was to his whole creation, and now he has made himself at home. He has become at one. The same as the Gentiles have become one with the Jews, God has become one with us. Folks, you should be standing and giving an incredible ovation. God was a stranger to his own home. Isn't that amazing? Just think of it. You create your own home and then wait 2,000 years to get to move in, or 6,000 years to move in.
And that's your plan all along.
That was the plan to do it, yes. Because there had to be alterations, modifications, adaptations made because you're 10 foot something, and these guys are only 5 foot two, so you've got to make some alterations here. You're much bigger than the house you're going to live in, and somehow you've got to conform this house to where that it is prepared for your occupation. We are one, folks, and we are at peace with each other. He with us and us with him. Now, whether or not you are ever at peace with God, let me assure you of this. God is at peace with you. The plan was declared before the foundation of the world. The life of God in humanity, be you reconciled to God, even as God in Christ is reconciled with you.
I want to finish up with a story today. The governor of one of the United States, the governor went to the state fair, and as he's walking around, he sees a little girl with the biggest mess of candy floss you have ever seen in your life. And she's got this sitting up on a big old stick, and it's bigger than her head, but she's starting to make a headway into it. And the governor says to her, little girl, that's a huge amount of candy floss. What do you call it here, candy?
Cotton candy. I was going to inform the folks what it was you're talking about.
Thank you. Cotton candy. That's a huge amount of cotton candy you've got. How on earth are you going to eat it all? And the little girl says, mister, I'm much bigger on the inside than I am on the outside. And I don't care how big your God is, but for me to convert back to the God of Christianity, I would have to become one of the children of a lesser God.
Yeah.
My God is bigger on the inside than he's ever been before.
Yeah.
And ever likely to be. He is every day as more and more of creation become God in the earth. As more and more of his creation from Calvary on reached the climax of creation when he and man became one.
Yeah.
I don't know about your God, but I know that my God is far bigger on the inside than he is on the outside.
There is something that takes place when you give him credit for that. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about you could credit somebody for something that was not correct. But now what you've just heard, folks, this is what we give credit to Christ for. This is what the mediator did between God and man. He mediated this. And he was a successful mediator. He's not still mediating. He was a mediator that was successful. And man, he's now Lord of all, King of kings, all the things that Paul went euphoric about.
And that God is inside you. I don't mean he's sort of there. Yeah, I don't mean he's there as a spirit. I mean, he's there. You are much bigger on the inside than you are on the outside and ever even know you will be. Because you are God in the earth.
Yeah, very true.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. If you would like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you can make us and speak to us about how you want to participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in the heart of the gospel.
And it's good night from Michael Williams right here from the bonus room above my sister's garage in the secret city. I'll be making some more phone calls, completing the pledge drive up until about the 15th of January. And so if I haven't called you yet, hold on, I will.
We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week. Only,
well, if this program has anything to do with it, probably better.
Write your check to Gospel Revolution. Check it careful and go rip it up. Make a new one out for two times that much. Now reward yourself for shaping up. This is how you know you made a difference. As the gospel's leaking out all around the world, gospel revolution's going higher. As millions more see freedom's flag unfurled.
Can I get an amen?
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Gospel Revolution.